Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, May 17th, 2007. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week we have a group discussion about fancy fermenters, specifically cylindroconical fermenters. We talk with members of Fayetteville Lovers of Pure Suds, or flops. Some have conicals, and some just want them. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. Well, let's look in the mailbag before we get into our topic for this week. Brian from the Philadelphia area wrote in with a few thoughts and tips about using better bottles. They've come up a few times along the way in our podcasts. Here's a couple excerpts from Brian's note. Brian says, the blue caps from your typical office water bottle will fit perfectly onto the better bottle. There are two types, the kind with no center hole. He says those are removed before installing the bottle under the cooler, and those with a center hole. The stem of the cooler knocks out the plug out of the center hole where it floats in the water. Brian says if your cooler uses the plug type, be sure to grab a plug from an empty bottle. He says the caps with the holes make perfect blow-off caps. Install the cap onto the better bottle after pitching and get a few feet of 3/4-inch OD tubing. This will fit perfectly into the hole. And Brian says he runs this tube into a gallon growler filled with Star Sand solution. So that's handy if you're not wanting to do an airlock, or if you're wondering if you're batch is going to crawl out of your better bottle and want to do a blow-off tube. That would be a good way to go. Also, Brian says if you're worried about scratching your better bottle, he says to safely clean the better bottle, number one, fill it with a gallon or two of warm water and some OxyClean or PBW. Throw in a regular washcloth and affix a solid or plugged cap that we talked about before. The washcloth will do all your scrubbing for you, so no carboy brushes are used to scratch the inside. Brian advises, shake it all around vigorously for a minute or two. Pop the cap. The warm water will cause the better bottle to collapse if you don't vent it. Put it back on and let the better bottle sit there for a few hours. You may have to periodically pop the cap until the solution cools down. He says, flip the better bottle upside down and place it into a bucket for another couple hours. This allows the cleaning solution to rest in contact with the top half of the better bottle. He says, drain, rinse, place upside down into the bucket to drain and dry, and then put it away. No brushes, no abrasives, no scratches. There you go. Sounds like good advice for better bottle users. Thanks, Brian. Brian, the better bottle man. I want to call him a boy, although it would finish the alliteration. Barry from the Netherlands writes, there's been some discussion recently on a talk board about adding dark grains later during the mash, for example, the last 30 minutes only, theoretically to reduce the risk of tannin extraction. Some recommend this while others say it's pointless. Do you have an expert's opinion on this? Well, I don't have an expert's opinion on this, but I did bring it up while we were talking in our group that you'll hear on the podcast today. I think the consensus was that if you're not getting any tannic astringencies from your beer, then don't worry about delaying putting the dark grains in your mash. So if you don't have a problem, don't worry about it. Just put them in the mash. Even if you are getting some astringencies, I think that's probably not the first place I'd look. I'd look first at over-sparging. However, my mind is always open. If anyone does do an experiment with adding dark grains late in the mash instead of the beginning, just let me know. I haven't experienced any problems myself, but as I said, I always will keep an open mind on it. So drop me a line and see what you think. More discussion about iodophore. From Don from Kelly's Island, Ohio. Don writes, sometimes I only need a small amount of iodophore to dispense in a spray bottle. Here's my method of measuring a small amount. a mixture of 3 milliliters or 60 drops of iodophore in 1 gallon of water results in the required 12.5 parts per million. Therefore, 15 drops in 1 quart of water results in the same 12.5 ppm. A quart of solution in a good quality spray bottle can sanitize quite a bit of equipment. Makes sense to me. Thanks, Don. So 15 drops in 1 quart. It's a lot less counting on brew day, which might be a good thing. As always, I appreciate everybody. I appreciate all the email. I'm not always prompt in replying, but I do appreciate your patience if you want a response. If you want to drop me a line, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just use the contact form on basicbrewing.com. On this week's Basic Brewing video, Steve Wilkes and I do a bit of party guile brewing. We talked a little bit about party guile brewing with Denny Kahn in our discussion of batch sparging. We make 2 beers out of 1 mash. I think what we wound up with is we did smaller batches. So we wound up with 2 2.5 gallons batches. One was what I'm calling an Imperial IPA, and the other is what I'm calling an English Mild. I don't know if they fit those styles exactly, but the first one was almost 1090 in gravity. The second was around 1030. So a little of that had to do with the fact that the higher gravity one was outside on the bigger burner. I think I got more evaporation out of that one. So it was a lot of fun to do. So check that out on basicbrewingvideo.com. Now, let's go on to our interview for this week, since we talked for a while. I've received a few letters asking about conical fermenters. What's the deal? What are they? How are they useful? Are they worth the money? So when I attended a brewing session this past weekend with members of the brewing club, Fayetteville Lovers of Pure Suds, here in Northwest Arkansas, I asked those questions, or somewhat similar questions, to members of a small group of those guys, some with and some without conicals. And here's what they said. Okay, we're here at Mark and Janice Smith's house. And we've been brewing, or actually, I say we in the royal we, I guess, because I haven't been brewing. Andy and I haven't been brewing, but everybody else has been brewing all day. And let's just go around the table and introduce ourselves, and some familiar voices you'll hear and some not. So you first, Andy.
Yeah, I'm Andy Sparks.
Ashley Goodwin.
Mark Smith.
Janice Smith.
Alan Gann.
And this is the first show for Janice and Alan. Everybody else you've heard before. Mark and Ash, you've heard from the Boulevard trip, and Andy, you hear like every other week, I think.
That's not such a bad thing.
But the topic today is conical fermenters, and you know, I came up here for the brew, and then I said, as a bonus, I'll talk to Mark about his conical fermenter because he's got one, and we've had requests for shows from viewers on conical fermenters. So it turns out we have 2 conical fermenter owners. Ash is also a conical fermenter owner, and some others of us are potential conical fermenter owners.
I'm definitely considering getting one at this point. I know Ash just got one last week, and yeah, it's an exciting proposition to get one. I really would like to have one.
So we'll start with you, Andy. What is it about the conical, and they're really cylindrical or cylindro-conical fermenters, right, Mark? I mean, we call them conical because it's just shorter to say, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. They're really it's more like a hopper, really, than anything else. And stainless steel. Mine, I have a 14.5 gallon conical, and it works great. I love it. There are some advantages and disadvantages, but I'm sure we'll get into that later. Ash just got his conical, like I said, last week, and I think he's fallen in love with it.
Yep.
Of course, he's getting a beer right now. But, there's – I know when I was looking for a conical, I was moving to a 10-gallon system, and I was trying to find fermentation vessel that had the ability to put all 10 gallons in the fermenter. And I looked at several different vessels. One was the stainless steel conical. Another was the plastic conical. And then the last was, I think, Sabco had a 15.5-gallon keg that was converted into a fermenter. Looked at all three of them, compared the prices, and got the blessing from my wife, Janice, thank you, to go ahead and get the stainless steel, mainly because the plastic, I didn't like the idea that you could scratch it and possibly have areas for bacterial growth. And then the Sabco, I didn't like the idea of it being difficult to clean. It just seemed like it was very, very difficult to get in there and work around in it. So decided on the stainless steel conical and have been very pleased with it.
So the fact that the stainless steel was more rugged than the plastic, that was why you went that way?
Absolutely, yeah. The scratching of the plastic. I've heard horror stories. In fact, one of our club members had a plastic conical, and he had nothing but trouble with it. He was never able to really brew a good batch of beer in it. He bought his used, I believe, mm-hmm. and there must have been some sort of a bacterial growth in it, and.
Had only brew farmhouse ales.
Only brewing the farmhouse ales. So that definitely was something that I took into consideration and really thought for an extra couple $100s. That was about the difference in cost between the two. That the stainless steel was the smart way to go. Kind of a lifelong lifelong commitment in terms of brewing and something to look forward to, something even passed down, to the kids, and if they ever get to that point and they want to do that, but something that's going to last a long time. So,
and Janice, I would assume that it is a fairly good size investment to get not only a conical but a refrigerator to go along with it, and a temperature controller to go along with a refrigerator to go with a conical. What do you think about all this?
You know, it's an investment, but it's well worth it. He started out with a kettle on our stove, and I thought, oh, how far will this go? And now we've got the 10-gallon all-grain brew system, and he loves it, and it's wonderful. It makes the best, most wonderful beer. It has ruined us on anything domestic. You know, we have to have home brew. The taste and what you get from it and what he gets putting into it. I mean, the science of brewing to him. I mean, it's all about the ingredients. What do I put into it? You know, how much should I add? It's the whole process is fascinating. It's been a great experience. We grow our own hops now. So it's it's really become a family process. We have our kids involved. They grind with us and help us brew, and it's been fun.
And when I came, your kids were pretending to brew their own batch of beer, which and they were talking about the process and going through the whole thing, so they know it all too.
They know. Would you like to talk with them? They will tell you all about it.
Well, Ash, you too have gone to the conical.
Got my first batch brewing right now.
And why did you finally make the leap?
Much like Mark, I wanted to go to 10-gallon batches, and it just seemed to make the most sense. And it's a lot less cleaning. I don't have to clean two carboys for primary, two carboys for secondary. It's more rugged. I mean, it's stainless. It's not you tip it over. You don't have glass all over your garage floor. And I wanted to go big. And so with the awkward blessings of my wife, I did.
So she may be a little more tentative than Janice.
Yeah. But she does like the good beer. So, I try to use that as an excuse.
So Andy, what's keeping you teetering on the edge?
Well, just a matter of cleaning out space in the garage, really. I wanted to point out one thing. We talked a minute ago about the fact that Sabco had a stainless fermenter too. That's basically just a 15-gallon stainless steel keg that's had the basically the inside tubes taken out, and then they basically, it's just like a giant stainless steel carboy, really. It's a nice unit. It can be used as a stainless fermenter. It can be cleaned, but you can't see inside it, so you can't see when it's cleaned. You have to trust that your chemicals clean it correctly. So, you know, and Mark was talking about that earlier. I mean, I do know people that use those, and it can be a good way to go. The nice thing about the conical is that you can open the lid. You can take the lid completely off. You can see inside it, and you can scrub it out with your hands, you know, with a scrubby pad, and get it completely clean. And that's, for most homebrewers, the whole cleanliness thing is the biggest deal. You know, being able to know that it's clean and not just feel like it might be clean, you know. And that's the problem with carboys even. You know, you use them and you scrub them, and, you know, after you think it's clean and it dries out and you look in the light and you still see the little haze line in it or something, you're like, wow, I didn't get it clean. I got to clean it again. So, you know, that's for me why I'm really leaning towards the stainless conical, is that I want something that I can be assured of that's very, very clean. Because until you can control that and you can control fermentation temperature, you really can't control the entire brewing process, you know. People make homebrew all the time. Lots of people make great homebrew. But if you make great homebrew, to make great homebrew consistently, you really have to be in control of those two things.
So. And where do you weigh in on this, Alan?
I just can't afford it yet.
Con number one.
Well, there is that. I mean, it is a significant investment. And, you know, like I say, along with it, if you want to do temperature control, you've got to get a refrigerator or a freezer to go along with it, and you've got to get a temperature control unit to go along with it. So it is a multi-layer investment. Maybe we should start at the beginning, and Mark, describe to us what exactly a conical fermenter is for someone who's never seen one.
Conical fermenters, they're a miniature version of what we see when we go to the big commercially available, you know, the tours that we see. But go to Budweiser or go to Coors or go to any of the big brewers and Boulevard. Breweries, Boulevard, for instance, when we just went, and you'll see large shaped, conical shaped vessels, and that's what we're talking about here. They have they're round at the top and they come into a cone at the bottom, and there's a reason that they have them this way. The reason they do this in the professional brewing is that the conical shaped fermenter, the hydraulics in the tank provide a great way to ferment the beer. A lot of surface area. You know, I'm definitely not an expert in terms of conicals, in terms of all the hydrology, but there's a reason they do this. And, you know, that, to be honest with you, that was another reason why I was thinking conical, was because, man, you go to, you know, to all these other breweries and the professionals do it this way, there's got to be some substance behind it, you know, and I really believe there is. That's kind of, in essence, what a conical fermenter is. Now, there's a lot of parts and pieces to the conical that do provide us with advantages over a carboy or any other vessel. And one of the main ones that I can think of is the ability to dump the trub or trub after the primary fermentation has happened. You can simply open a valve at the bottom of the tank. And if all goes well, cross your fingers, depending on the size of the valve and everything, you'll get the yeast to basically bleed off. And you can take that yeast and you can reuse it, or you can dump it and not use it. But that avoids the need to rack into another vessel for secondary fermentation. Big advantage, in my opinion, because you don't have to clean another vessel. You don't have to sanitize another vessel. You don't have to sanitize a racking cane and all that. You're talking maybe an hour's worth of work or more to get all that prepared and to actually rack it. Here, you just open up a valve. It's gone. You close it. You're done. You know. And depending on the yeast that you're using and the stage of where you're at, how quickly that yeast comes out can be you know, it can be a few minutes, a few seconds to maybe 15 or 20 minutes, depending on, you know, where you're at and the size of the valve that you have to open it.
So to describe it, there is a cylinder on the top, and then which leads to a cone on the bottom, an inverted cone, and at the bottom of the tip of that cone is a valve that you would use to open up and just take your yeast right out. I mean, the yeast would settle down into that one point, and then that takes away all your worries about autolysis and any off flavors that you would get from your beer sitting on that tube. But there's another valve near the bottom, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right about all the points you just mentioned. The yeast just settles out, and it goes right out the bottom. The other valve that you're talking about is a racking arm. And this racking arm is, most fermenters that I know on the market come with this as a standard feature. It's a rotating racking arm. So it allows you to sample and also pull the beer out of the fermenter after fermentation. The rotation on the racking arm, it's a kind of an L-shaped tube that goes into the fermenter, and as you twist the valve on the outside, that L rotates either down or up, and you rotate it down until you just maybe tap the yeast, and then you can rotate it back up, and you know that's the point at where you have beer and wort, yeast, I should say, and that's a great place to, you know, basically keg your beer from. And it's, you know, that's to be able to sample your beer again without having to get a wine thief or a turkey baster or whatever sanitized is another great way to another good advantage of a conical fermenter. If you're really a nut about trying to track your fermentation original gravity or final gravities as fermentation happens, you can do it as often as you like, and it's just basically opening a valve and closing a valve and maintaining a fairly sterile environment for your beer to ferment in.
And I would think that especially if you're doing a lager and you want to track where you are in the fermentation process, if you do want to do a diacetyl rest or something, to track where you are in the gravity of the beer would be really handy to do with something like that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you have an anticipated final gravity that you're looking for in most of your lagers. I mean, any beer that you do should know where you think you're going to end up. And as you go through your lager fermentation and you get down to your final gravity and fermentation seems to be slowing, you can take a sample and test it and say, that's where I want to be. It's time for the diacetyl rest and go from there. So absolutely.
Well, there's lots of beer styles where it's nice to be able to take a sample and see how far along it is. Like, let's say, a barley wine. Typically, those are huge beers that don't always attenuate where we would like them to. But with a conical fermenter, you could actually take samples and know, okay, it's basically stopped. It's not where I want it to be. I need to do some things to try and drive it lower, whether it's add some fresh yeast, roust yeast, whatever. But there's several beer styles where it's really nice. And other point is when beers are getting kicked off, and you're a little worried that it's not going off as fast, or did I pitch enough yeast? And you can take some samples during the first few hours, and you can say, no, I see it's taken off, it's starting to drop, you know, the numbers are starting to drop, and you can get, it can add that comfort level, you know, to a brewer that you know everything is going where it should instead of it's not fermenting as fast or it's not taking off where I think it should. Maybe I didn't throw enough yeast in or whatever. So it's really nice to be able to take samples all along the way. The other thing is I think this is one of the things that really helps brewers grow is that they get to, if they taste their beers during all points of the beer process, they get to learn about where things happen, what it should taste like at each step. And then, you know, that helps them grow as brewers. You know, I know it does as me, and I really love to taste my beer, especially right at first, after it gets going a ways, when I rack it, when I bottle it, I taste it at every step. And I think that really does help a lot.
And again, you can do this with a 6.5-gallon carboy, right. But it involves getting out a racking cane, or it involves getting out the autosiphon, and it's a... it's a lot more cumbersome to take a sample at that
and
point.
Every time you do that, you take another chance of infecting your beer. And with this, there is no chance of infecting your beer. You basically open the valve, squirt some into a cup, taste it, measure it, whatever you want.
So Ash, what, as far as convenience goes, what have you seen? Are you mirroring what Mark has seen so far?
A lot of what I'm doing is mirroring what Mark is doing, and that's one of the reasons I got the Conical. Mark has made some incredibly good, consistent beers, and I have made some very good beers, but sometimes it's hit or miss, and I think sometimes it's because of the lack of control. And with a Conical, and of course, I went all in. I bought the fridge. I bought the temperature controller and all that. I've now added great control to my brewery, and I fully expect to make much better beers, more consistent beers down the road. And that's what brought me to it, and I'm seeing the same thing. The only thing I miss is that 2 days into fermentation when you have that huge yeast action and, you know, it's all spinning around in your carboy, that I miss. Mm-hmm. But everything else, like we were talking earlier, covers it. I'm tickled.
So you can't see the swirling around. You can't see all that, and that is fun. I mean, when you go from, say, the first stage, you know, a lot of people start with a plastic bucket,
right,
and you don't get to see the fermentation. Then you go into the glass carboy, and then you get to see all the swirling around, and it's just like a snow globe going on in there.
It made it fun, but my wife did want the carboys out of the kitchen, out of the bathroom, out of that dark closet in the back, and, you know, if I've got to move them out to the garage, I've got to get the fridge to control my temperatures. The garage is going to get hot. I just went, you know, I might as well get all in.
And the stainless conical, at least some models, maybe all, allow you to pressurize your beer as well. Is that not right?
Yes. Not all models that I'm aware of. When I was purchasing mine, this was back in 2004, the fall of 2004. The only model that I know of that was pressurizable was the Blinkman model. The others didn't advertise it. Now, they may very well be pressurizable, but that's a pretty big advantage when it comes to one specific thing, and that is getting the beer from the conical to the keg, especially in a refrigerator. You can't. There are leg extensions you can buy from the conical to get it raised up to where you can actually just gravity fall the beer into a keg, but that's not going to fit in a fridge that I know of. You know, I'm sure there are fridges out there that are very expensive that you could do that, but a regular residential type fridge, your output is going to be much lower than the top of the keg. So being pressurizable means you can pump CO2, push CO2 into the top of it, and actually push that beer out of the conical and into your kegs when it comes time to keg the beer. Huge advantage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can even go as far as, if you want to, you could bung up the tank and try to create some national pressure in there if you want to, but definitely not something that's recommended by any of the conical manufacturers. I think 3 to 6 pounds per square inch is what they're recommending is the maximum pressure in those. And the one that I have comes with a pressure relief valve on it. I think it about 2 or 3 PSI, it goes off. So, being able to push that beer with CO2 is a huge advantage when it comes time to keg the beer and put it away.
I don't know if you've ever used done kegging. 2 pounds of CO2 is not much pressure, and, you know, it's not going to come flying out of the keg, you know, but it'll just barely push it out. And I've seen that, I know that the Beer and More Beers don't support that feature, the ability to compress, you know, to actually force CO2 in them, but the Blinkman does, and yours is a Blinkman, right?
Yeah, it is. It is a Blinkman, and they advertise that. That's one of their big selling points if you go to their website. And I think the main difference between the two that I've seen is the lid. Mm-hmm. The lid itself for the Blinkman is a dome-shaped lid with a patented seal that goes around it. It's kind of like a strap that you tighten down, and it really provides a pressurized seal for you, whereas the B3 lid is a flat piece of steel that can deflect as you seal it. So I think that's pretty much why that's not considered pressurizable.
You just kind of clamp it down onto the top of the thing.
Yes.
And I want to make it clear that we have no vested interest in endorsing any one brand over the other as we're discussing these. And that, you know, there may be some that get perfect results out of using a plastic conical fermenter. And, you know, if that's where you want to start, then that, you know, that may work out perfectly well for you. So, so step us through what is different. I mean, in the steps that you guys use, what is different in your brew day or your fermentation maintenance day or whatever that you've got to use or you've got to do when you're using a conical as opposed to a carboy?
Most important is, like with any fermentation vessel, conical, carboy, whatever it happens to be, this has got to be clean. You got to clean it very, very well. Make sure there isn't any leftover residue from a previous batch. You have to sanitize it, make sure it's a sanitary condition. And then you end up with some slightly different variations of using a carboy versus using a conical. You know, obviously the main thing is you have a much larger area where you can pump stuff into with a conical. Versus a carboy. You also have a pressurizable system that you can use if you'd like. I typically don't at this point. But just as you go through the whole process of putting the beer in, the differences are fairly minimal, but it really comes down to when you get to the point where primary fermentation is over. Secondary fermentation is the conditioning phase is what you want to get to. The carboy, you're taking a racking cane, going through the process of sanitizing it, racking it over into another carboy, and you know going that way with a conical. Once again, you're dumping the trub, and you're done. 5-10 minutes, and you're done. Just a much easier process. It comes down to a time versus money almost for a lot of people, and that's kind of what it's come down for me is do I want to invest the time to deal with, in my case, brewing 10 gallons, four carboys, you know, two primaries and two secondary carboys, cleaning, sanitizing, and then doing it all over again because I've got to, once the beer's out, I got to clean them again. So it's a very, very a tedious process, and it was one of the things that I dreaded going to 10 gallons was, man, I can't do that with the carboys. That's just too much work, and I know a lot of people do, and they make very good beer with doing it that way, but it's not something that I was really interested in doing.
You're talking about cleaning. Now, I've only used mine one time. I mean, I've still got my first beer sitting in that conical, but it was so cool, you know, to open that whole top off, get in there, get it clean. It was so easy, painless. You know, it was like, yeah, I can do this. I don't have to mess with the stupid
bottle brush
and all that. And you know, and you always have that little bit of yeast or whatever left on the shoulder of the carboy. It was, I loved it.
Well, you can't get your arm in a carboy. At least I can't. I've tried. I can't do it. You know, and that's one of the big benefits is being able to actually take off the top, get your whole arm in there, feel around, and you can feel things that you never normally you know can't see if you rub your hand along there, and a little PBW solution or some sort of cleaning solution that you like. Rub that around and scrub it if you'd like, or just let it work with hot water. You can actually, you know, get in there and feel whether you've gotten to that point of cleanliness. And there's a lot to be said for that. Andy mentioned control in your brewery. I'm a control freak. I am absolutely a control freak, and
you're
I think
an engineer.
Yeah, you know, you've heard some of my emails and things, and it's a big advantage to be able to have control over as many aspects of the brewing process. And fermentation is a huge part of what we do, and really when it comes down to it, what do we do? Fermentation. We don't do anything. The yeast does all the work for us. So we need to make sure that we've got a vessel that's that the yeast is not competing with a bacteria to that's trying to eat the wort as well as the yeast is. So having a clean, sanitized fermenter is absolutely necessary to have a great beer.
So is there a certain amount of disassembling that has to go on? Do you have to take all the little pieces and parts apart?
Do you?
Well,
yeah, Ash is wondering. He hadn't gotten that far yet.
I have not. I understand it's recommended. The conical that I have is a Blinkman. Again, we're not trying to you know, I'm not getting paid to say this or anything, but
that we know of.
it's a weldless fitting. So what that means is we have much like people's boil kettles, we have nuts and gaskets that are tightened to create the seal in the fermenter. And it's recommended that you disassemble all those parts and pieces for the racking arm, for the for where you're dumping the tube. There's a valve down there. It's recommended you take all that apart every time that you're done brewing and clean it. Man, I don't have the time to do that. So they do have this did come with a three-piece ball valve, which I have taken apart at the end of the season and cleaned and found very little, if anything, in there after probably 15 to 20 consecutive brews. So you are supposed to take everything apart. I do not take everything apart. Like I said, I don't have the time, and I feel pretty confident after I've taken the ball valves apart and looked at them in my opinion, it's not necessary, but I understand the manufacturer's obligations to say it needs to be done. I would have a tough time believing that a lot of people that do this on a everyday basis would actually take all the parts and pieces apart on it. I definitely would recommend maybe once a season go ahead and take the pieces apart, you know, sanitize them well, clean them well, and then put them back together. But after every brew would be very... very tedious, and really would, you know, for the advantages of a conical would be kind of thrown to the side at that point, in my opinion.
Well, professional brewers don't do that, do they? I mean, professional brewers basically use chemicals to clean the conicals and the fermenters and the tools they have, you know. So I would say it's about the same thing.
So do you feel better, Ash?
I feel much better. You know, and well, you comment about that. It's the same deal. When the only time they really get in there and tear everything apart is when they get an infected batch. And then they've got to get in, and then they start taking those valves apart and really figure, you know, because somewhere something got in there and they got to fix that. But usually, you know, I don't know how many times you can brew before you have that problem.
So, I mean, we've talked about all the positives. What do you guys see as the downsides? What were the... when in deciding to make the purchase or not, what were the elements on the negative side that you were weighing?
Absolutely dollar signs. I mean,
yeah, they're expensive.
Besides cost, some of the things that I thought of, and this is only for the 10-gallon or larger conicals, are, you know, they're very difficult to move after they're full. So you want to make sure that, you know, if you've got a 12-gallon or 14-gallon conical, I know there's 27-gallon conicals, maybe even a 42-gallon conical out there now, you need to have them in place and where you want to be fermenting the beer. You can probably, with a 12-gallon conical, get one of your buddies to grab one side and you grab the other and move it around, but very, very awkward to move. The weldless fittings, if you don't get them seated properly, could possibly leak, which is not good. There are fittings out there that are welded fittings that there are potential areas for infection with the welded fittings. But, you know, other than that, I'm not sure what other cons there would be, to be honest with you. Do you have any?
I've had to rearrange the way I set my brewery up. And my wife's happy because that means I'm cleaning the garage. But I've had to rebuild a stand, move a different stand, and those kind of things to accommodate it. But that's our hobby. That's what we do. We get to play with these cool gizmos and
that's fun.
Make great beer. Yeah,
that's
so,
the fun part.
So,
but it is.
It's hot and sweaty, but other than that, is all right.
There's additional. You mentioned additional costs involved with a conical fermentation fridge, temperature controller. Those are things you don't have to have, but they just kind of happen. You know, there are conicals out there, and we spoke of B3s. One of the advantages that they have is their flexibility and their ability to kind of tailor what you need. They have a glycol jacketed fermenter out there, and you know that would kind of resolve the fact of having to go get a new refrigerator. But I have no experience with that. But you know, the main con is price, and it is an investment, and you know, it's one of those things you have to weigh. Is it worth the return on your money? Is it worth the benefits that you get? For some people, yes. For other people, no.
I use my conical more than my neighbor uses his bass boat.
Oh, there you go.
And it's a lot less money.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, if you buy a bass boat, it's a whole lot of money, and it's sitting out in the yard a whole lot of time of the year, and you can use a conical fermenter anytime. If you're budgeting, I don't want to ask you guys personally what you spent, but you may know a range of cost for getting into the conical fermenter land. What range would you say is out there?
When I made the decision to go to 10 gallons, you know, I'd started like everybody else did, I think, brewing in the kitchen, you know, 3 gallons, moving out to the garage with a turkey fryer that you got for Christmas, and then eventually going to all grain and then going out all the way out to 10 gallons, I had a budget in my mind of about $1,000. And that was for the cost of the hot liquor tank, the boil kettle, the larger volumes of both of those, a stand, a pump, and then the conical fermenter. I went over that just a teeny bit, to be honest with you. But, you know, the conical fermenters, I think, range from $500 to, you know, like I said, a glycol jacketed, you're probably looking well over $1,000 to do something like that.
Similar. I mean, I ended up spending right at $1,000 between the temperature controller, the fridge, which I bought at a scratch and dent place, so I got it cheaper.
And it's actually a freezer, right?
Yeah, it's a freezer, and then I added the external, you know, the little Johnson control on it to control the temp, and ended up right at a grand. And fortunately, I won't have to do that again.
Yeah, I was going to say it's going to be about a grand because you're looking at about $500 for the fermenter. You know, you pretty much, if you're going to get a conical fermenter, you know, we said you could go either way, but the truth is, like I said before, temperature control is key to making excellent beer repeatably. And so you pretty much are going to want some way to control temperature on this conical fermenter. Otherwise, you can only use it in the perfect time of the year. So really, you're looking at buying a fridge for it, you know, whether it's used or not. And the thing about getting the freezer, the nice thing about the freezers is they don't have an ice compartment up at the top. So you don't have to, you have one open box, and you don't have, you know, a refrigerator is compartmentalized, and so you have to work within its confines. Freezer is nice that it doesn't. It is just a one big box. So, you know, with all that stuff going on, and then your Ranco, you know, he said he went with the Johnson control. It's a Ranco, which is a little fancier. They're about twice the price of a Johnson controls. I know. I think they are. And it's awesome. And if I was going to go that route, I would have all that stuff for sure. So you're looking at, you know, the controller, the freezer or fridge, and the thing, $800 to $900 probably. If you do it economically, $1,000 if you go new. You know, but that's, you know, like you pointed out, Other people buy a $10,000 bass boat and put it in their yard, you know, that they can only use for 5 months of the year maybe, and we can use this all year long. That guy fills his freezer with crappie, you know, has a couple fish fries a year. My kegerator's got beer in it every day.
And what's your address, Andy?
You know my address.
Yes, I do. So, Alan, what do you think? Are you, in hearing this discussion, are you wanting to go more that direction, or are you still, what do you think?
Yeah, I'll go that direction eventually. I mean, I've got the refrigeration or freezer space for a conical fermenter of the 14.5 gallon size, but it's just getting my wife to approve the expenditure, and I will have one eventually.
We need to get Janice her phone number, and then she can give her a call. And
work her magic.
Yeah,
don't
that's
ask,
right.
Don't tell.
This conical just showed up one day. I don't know where it came from.
I'm borrowing it.
So any, it's a loner. So any final thoughts that we haven't talked about? Anything that we can in people, you know, if they know nothing about conical fermenters out there, what is it that we've left out that we should talk about?
What have we left out?
We love them and they're
how
expensive.
Cool they look in your garage, and all your friends will be really, really envious.
Let's not discount that. I mean, there is a coolness factor to this.
They make your buddies go ooh.
They are shiny.
They are shiny. They are the centerpiece of your brewery. They can be.
Can you see yourself in them? That's the thing.
Absolutely.
Oh, they're rushed.
They're not big enough for me to get in.
I've tried. I think one of the things that we haven't talked a whole lot about is dry hopping and being able to add stuff to the beer during the secondary process. After you go through and you're able to dump the trub out at the primary fermentation, you decide you want to dry hop the beer. Pretty easy on the model that I have. I don't know that all of them have this, but I have an access hatch that you can actually open up, which is, if anybody's familiar with the corny kegs, it's the corny keg lid on the top of the dome of the carboy I have. You just open it up, put your dry hops in, whether you put those in a bag or just put them in loose, close it up, and you're done. You can do that with spices, anything that you want to add to the beer. And it's pretty nice to be able to do that without having, again, to have to rack the beer or try to, I don't know if any of you have tried to shove 2 ounces of hops through the carboy in a mesh bag. It can be kind of difficult to do that, or say oak chips or oak cubes or anything of that nature. It's very difficult to get 2 ounces of that through the top of your 5 gallon carboy hole. But it can be done with a little patience, but this is a much, much easier process. You just dump it in, close it up, and you're done.
You know, that brings up a great point. You know, last year when you went to the Home Brewers Conference, you got to interview Matt Brendelson from Firestone Walker. Have you ever heard of that place, Mark?
I think I'm fairly familiar with that place, yeah.
Mark's brother works there. But one of the things that he does is he dry hops on the warm side, which sounds great. You know, fermentation ebbs, temperature is rising, there's lots of activity in the fermenter, and that's when he likes to throw the dry hops in so that they get stirred around a lot. Well, if you're using a carboy, to find out when that point is, you have to basically sample repeatedly to try to find out when you've ebbed your fermentation. And in a conical, because you can sample anytime you want, You could actually know, just like Matt Brendelson does, exactly when the peak of fermentation has passed. You can open the lid and throw your hops in. Which, for a carboy brewer, I actually tried this a while back, and I used a plastic bucket because that was, for me, with a spigot on it, it was the only way I could figure out how to constantly test my beer, and it was easy for me to get lots of hops in after the fact. So, you know, that sort of stuff, dry hopping, like you said, you know, you want to become, you know, really good and be able to do all these fancy tricks that the best brewers in America are doing. You know, it's going to be really hard to do it without professional style equipment.
you can stay on the cutting edge. I think that's what we're talking about here. You know, one of the things that I don't know that we've touched on yet with conicals is their impermeability to light. I mean, you can't get light through a stainless steel carboy or stainless steel conical. A carboy, very easy. You got glass there. Plastic, you can still get some light through that. So that's another advantage that we haven't talked about yet with the conicals is that light that can get to your beer and skunk it. You're not going to see that with a stainless steel conical. It's not going to get there. It's black. It's dark. So.
Another question that people might have is, what about blow-off tubes? Can you use a blow-off tube on a stainless steel conical like you have?
Absolutely. There's the hole that's provided for the stopper or for the for a blow-off tube is approximately the same size as a 6.5 gallon carboy. So I use that quite often and run into many problems when I haven't done that, where we have, you open up the fridge and, oh, look at that, the fridge is leaking. There's yeast everywhere. I've about learned my lesson after about the third or fourth time of having to clean up the inside of that fridge that, you know, I just need to plan the blow-off tube and the bucket of sanitizer. It's just too big of a mess to not deal with, you know.
It's a good question, Alan.
Yeah, it is a good question. As a matter of fact, we were talking this before you started recording. One of the things that at the Blinkman site they show an example of, and Ash was talking about this, is actually they punch a hole through the front of the door on the freezer or your refrigerator and set the bubbler basically outside the door so that you can see it bubbling without having to open the door to look to see if it, you know, how it's working, because that's what we all do. I don't know about you, but I get home from work. The first place I go is to look at my fermenter to see how my batch is doing. Is it perking along? Does it look good? And then everything's okay. I go get a beer or whatever.
And say hi to the wife.
Yeah.
Actually, I think the saying is, if you're looking, you're not cooking.
It's funny that you mention that, because my wife gets quite upset with me. The first thing I check on, especially that Monday after I've brewed on the Sunday or Saturday, I get home from work and I'm all excited. I get home, I check on the beer, very first thing. You've got two kids, you know. I've got three kids, the beer, you know. And she gets upset with
you got
me.
Millions of kids, all those little baby yeast cells.
That's right.
She gets upset for me from time to time, but it is pretty exciting to be able to check on that beer after a day or two of fermentation.
And you want to know that it's happy and going good and that everything worked. You know, you put everything together, you put all this hard work together, and it's not until the next day that it's going good that you know everything was successful. You know, the day you brew it, you think everything went well, but, you know, it isn't until you see it cooking and bubbling that you're, like, happy and satisfied and can relax, kind of. So
it's the miracle of life.
Yeah.
So, Mark, to close out, I appreciate you guys taking time, and I think we've learned a lot. And three of us are more envious. But Mark, if you got to tell us where you are in your latest contest submissions.
Well, I just entered the National Homebrew Competition and found out that three of my beers have moved on to the second round, which I'm pretty excited about. And just recently, the Kansas City the homebrewer. Was it the Kansas City Homebrew
Competition?
The Beer Masters Competition. Mm-hmm. I had three beers placed there, which I was pretty excited about. But I don't know. I'm kind of shy when it comes to that sort of thing. So I'm not gonna. I don't want
to
get shy.
He's gonna have to buy a bigger house so he can display his all his medals.
From where I'm sitting, I can see 15 different medals, from bronze to best in show with a plaque. So. He's going to do all right.
And what are the beers that we're going to root for in the National Homebrewing Competition?
I've got three beers that I've entered: a fruit wheat beer, peach wheat beer, a vanilla porter that I've entered in the spice beer, and then a brown American brown ale that placed, which is always a challenge in the American beers. A lot of entries, so I'm pretty proud of that. But like I said, the guys are sitting around me. You know, they brew some great beer as well, and I just need to get them off their butt and get them to enter some beers as well, because There'd be a lot of competition if they've got their beers sent off here. I tell you, they make some great beers.
Well, Mark is modest, and
very modest.
We've been sipping on especially the vanilla porter. We've been sipping on it. Boy,
is that the same vanilla porter that went to the contest?
Yes, it is.
Well, the other folks in the contest have something to worry about. Let me just say that because it's tasty.
Well, we selfishly will root for you, Mark, and I appreciate you guys for Janice, who's now in the other room. She's waving. We appreciate y'all, and we will aspire to look at conicals for ourselves. Thanks, guys.
Come look at mine anytime.
Take care, James.
Well, thanks again to Janice and Mark for use of their house and all their hospitality. And also thanks to Andy, Ash, and Alan for taking part of the conversation. It was a fun day, a fun evening of chatting around the microphone. And afterwards, Mark shared some Firestone Walker 10th anniversary ale. Man, it's good stuff. Very, very good stuff. Thank you again, Mark, for being so generous in sharing that wonderful beer. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from when you do. And while you're on our site, you can check out our online shop where you can find great pricing on our DVDs and a combo deal to save you even more when you buy both of them. In our first DVD, we walk you through the extract brewing process step by step from boiling to bottling. And in our Stepping into All Grain DVD, we take you through the all grain process from milling your grain to collecting your wort. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, as always, you can order it from us online. And I'll send you one myself. And I'm still getting orders for our Go Forth and Flocculate t-shirt. So I'm expecting some cool vacation photos from you guys for our online gallery. I appreciate all that. And again, thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Special Topics in Calamity Physics and Findlay 2x4 Basics Workbench Assembly Kit. So some honeydews about to be done around the house, maybe. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we'll get a little teeny slice of that. We appreciate your support. Well, that's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.